RadioInfluence.com.
This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
Welcome into this Tuesday, October 16th edition of the Landry Football Podcast. We have a lot to react to this weekend. What a big weekend of surprises in college football. A lot of NFL action to recap as well. We've got some questions we want to get to with you, so we're excited about that and looking forward to getting to all of that with you. Want to remind you that we are breaking down the film daily, all the time at LandryFootball.com, and it's where we want you to go. If you're a listener to this website, the great compliment to this is to join us at LandryFootball.com, where we take you inside the game from inside the film room, breaking it down from a coaching and scouting perspective, telling you why it happened. Everyone knows what happens, but why it happened, giving you a coaching and scouting viewpoint. So you can join all 32 NFL teams and now approaching 80 major college programs that have become members of LandryFootball.com to get all the latest inside information for less than a magazine subscription. You can get the film on breakdowns, on recruiting, college football, the draft, the NFL, coaching search matters, which are starting to heat up. So check out LandryFootball.com today for our best season membership package ever. You can try it out for a month, 3, 6, 9 months, or yearly. So you can get access to a veteran coach, scout, and administrator. All you have to do is tell us you heard us about it right here on this podcast, and you can get the special that we have here and the rate that we have up on the website. All right, let's get into the weekend that was in college football. I want to talk a little bit about a couple of things. And it is something that I get asked a lot. You hear this a lot of the talking heads talk about it. Strength of schedule. How good is this team? How good is that team? Well, we don't really know. They haven't played anybody. You know, it's one of the things, and I've explained in detail. I'm not going to go over it again. In fact, I went over it last week, how I grade a college football team and the numerous ways that I do it in over 20 different categories. But the way I think to evaluate, because you can't control necessarily who you play, and there are cases where a team's record, their team's productivity, how they look, is directly correlated to who they're playing. The strengths or weaknesses of their opponent will make them look better or worse. Again, a trained eye can see that, where the result is affected by the opponent, where in some cases it's not. And it's not as easy to say, well, you know, go through, you know, 10,000 different scenarios and say it is or it isn't. You can look at certain teams, and I'll give you a couple of examples. Is if you watch Central Florida, which I have, and that's been the discussion because people want to know, well, why don't they get a chance? Why don't people give them any respect? Well, I've studied them. I've studied all but one game this year, every snap. And I'm going to get to that game. It's just it takes a while to get through a lot of tape. They've got a lot of speed. They're a very good team. But their success has a lot to do with who they play. People say, oh, but they beat Auburn last year. Folks, what I can tell you from a personnel guy's standpoint, there are a lot of teams, maybe without big names, that could beat schools with big names, bigger blue blood programs. That can happen. We've seen it happen. I mean, it happens. It can happen. It does happen. That's not the issue. The thing that people that don't work in football don't get is the cumulative effect every week of playing a tough team. So when you take a program like Central Florida, and there's no doubt they could line up. Well, first of all, they lined up and beat Auburn last year. They definitely lined up and beat Auburn this year. That team is struggling. Central Florida's got a lot of speed. They don't have a lot of size. But they can play with a lot of people. The issue is not whether you can line up if you're Boise or Central Florida or any one of these teams like that and beat a power. You can. But what happens, not when you line up and you beat Auburn, but what happens when you have to play Alabama the next week, then Florida, then Mississippi State, then LSU, then Georgia, then South Carolina, then Kentucky? You see, that's the difference that people don't get, is when you can play a schedule that you can separate. There's not many teams that are on the same level as you personnel-wise. You can have off days, down days, and win. You're not dominant. But it's the difficulty of going through the gauntlet of a season. And, folks, it's not just the Central Floridas. I use this analogy. College football's changed on the big-time level over the years. I've said it before. Oklahoma, Nebraska, two of the historically great programs in college football. Well, when they win the Big Eight, look at how things played out in the Big Eight. It was Nebraska, Oklahoma playing their first four games at home against weak opponents out of conference. And then, well, in Oklahoma's case, they would always play Texas, so that was a difference. But then you get into the conference, you play Kansas and Kansas State, Iowa State, bad, bad, bad. And then you'd end up at the end of the year, and they'd both be unbeaten, and they play either in Norman or Lincoln for the Big Eight championship, and the winner went to the Orange Bowl. It was a lot easier, and you didn't play 12 games then. You played 11 before, and then before that you played 10, and then even long ago you played 9. So my point is it's great anytime you go unbeaten. As a coach, I can tell you, it's tough to beat anybody. I think Central Florida should be recognized for the consistency of which they've beaten teams in their league. But to make that leap that they belong, here's how I look at it. How would they do if they played? Let's just put them in the ACC. Well, there's really only one team that's really good. Really? And that's Clemson? You know, there's still the cumulative effect of playing three, four, five of those, six of those teams that are pretty good, may not be very good, but pretty good, that catches up with you. It doesn't catch up with you in a smaller league. That's what people don't think. Now, when I watch Alabama, there's no doubt that the schedule's weak. It really wouldn't matter in their case if they played, you know, Wisconsin, Iowa, Arizona State, you know, USC, you know, I mean, you could just list them. They would be winning, maybe not as decisively as they have, but they'd still be winning decisively, maybe by 20, 30 points in most cases. And the point is I call it grading to a standard. You don't grade a team by how good they are and how good they look against a given opponent. Because then you have to determine, well, how good is the opponent? Well, how good is that opponent's opponent? You have to grade them as they go along. And then you have to see how teams get better and better. LSU played an Auburn team that's not been very good. I think Auburn was actually better when LSU played them than they are now. Miami's really going to hell in a handbasket. But LSU's gotten better. So you can't look at LSU and say they're not good because Auburn and Miami are bad. If the only thing you know about evaluating football teams or players is how they looked against an opponent and how good that team is and how many games have they won, and I know that's part of the analytics side of it, but that's the missing piece of the ability to evaluate to a standard with a trained eye as to how good a team is. Teams never stay the same. From week to week, you either get better or you get worse. You don't stay the same. So when you look at it as examining the strength of schedule, you really are, to some degree, going to be misled. It's important. It's useful if you've got it. But it does not indicate necessarily how good or how weak a team is. It is an indicator, though. It does help you. But you can't dismiss certain things. If you do, you're going to be wrong. And, of course, the reason why it is so important in college football is because that's how we determine the team. If you look at on a week-to-week basis, very often you don't have the same team. Play home, you play away. You come off this game, and how much you improve from that game to the next game has a great deal to do with it. I'm going to go with LSU again because that was the biggest, you know, one of maybe, I think, the biggest statement win last week. Did not play very well against Florida. Let me take that back. They played well against Florida. I thought they played fairly well, but they didn't block up front very well offensively. Joe Burrow was under a lot of pressure. He didn't make nearly as many plays. And Florida did a much better job offensively of attacking LSU's defense than Georgia did. LSU made some adjustments to that. Not the same team, LSU versus Florida and Georgia. And in Gainesville versus in Baton Rouge has a lot to do with it. But there's more to it than that. It's not just that. So I think understanding Georgia. How good is Georgia? No, we don't know how good Georgia is, quite frankly. I was as guilty as anybody saying, you know, this Georgia team is talented. They're good. They're good last year. Kirby's got this program right next to Alabama. I stepped into that, and I saw some things that, quite frankly, when I look at it and I grade it, I was wrong. Why? Perception. I got caught into the perception that Georgia is this, and they're not quite that. And, look, they're not quite as good as I thought they were. There were signs all throughout the year. It's not that I ignored them. I thought they could overcome it because they overcame it against other teams. But then you go in and you put the same team in the same environment. Excuse me, in a different environment, in Tiger Stadium, a good LSU team, I don't think a great LSU team, but a good one, a physical team that was ready to play, and the youth of Georgia stood out. The inexperience stood out. Quite frankly, some decisions on how maybe they've coached this Georgia team this year stood out, caught up with them. This happens. One thing I notice, got to be careful with week-to-week judgments. You know, we've got same thing. LSU's not that good against Florida. Well, kind of thought that too. They weren't. Now they're king of the hill again. Now they can control their own destiny. Well, the only team that controls anything right now is Alabama. And if your control your own fate includes having to beat Alabama, you don't control a whole lot. I guess what I'm trying to say is if you want to have an accurate assessment of what's going on, let the games come to you. Let the teams show from week to week how much better they can get, whether they regress, whether they're up, whether they're down, whether they better at home, on the road, how do they adjust to environment situations. That's what determines things. Snap judgments week to week are going to get you up and down. This guy's struggling. This guy's really good. Oh, you have some teams that have struggled consistently this year. You have some teams that have been pretty good week to week. But there's really only one team, Alabama, that doesn't seem vulnerable to this point. Now, could something happen to them? You know, perhaps. And if they do and they become vulnerable, then game's on. Right now, everybody's, you know, looks very, very normal. Everybody looks beatable except Alabama. I mean, if I told you, if I said something a few weeks ago that I'm going to have to amend because the film tells me otherwise. I thought there was a Alabama, Georgia, and then a gap. Now, then there is Ohio State, Clemson, then a gap. Well, it's really not. I think Clemson and Ohio State are really, really talented. And they haven't played their best ball. Let me say this. If you get this deep into the season and you're not playing your best ball, that says something. Are you going to put it together? Well, if you do, then they could become much better teams. But if they haven't to this point, you're gambling that they're going to be better. And maybe they just don't have that it. Maybe they're talented, but maybe it just that glue together, that chemistry, that ability to put their foot on the neck of an opponent, maybe it's just not there. With Clemson, we see that from time to time. With Ohio State, they're just piddling around with some teams that they look anything but dominant against Minnesota. But they're still talented. Notre Dame struggling against Pitt. So my point is, if I tell you that Ohio State, Clemson, Notre Dame, Michigan, Texas, Georgia, Oklahoma, LSU, Florida, Oregon, Kentucky, A&M, I mean, Iowa. I mean, we could sit there and throw all those teams in a hat and pull out two and they put them in the matchup. You shouldn't be surprised with what happens in any of those games. Now, I think certain matchups would favor some of the other, one or the other, but I just think we see quite a few good teams, but everybody's vulnerable. I really believe that, except Alabama. And we'll see at this point, I would say that it's Alabama, and we'll see if Alabama slips in any regard. I mean, they're so far ahead. If they slip, that they're still in a position to where they're that much further ahead. But how much better can somebody get? How much down to earth can Alabama get? Don't know. That's what's fun about it. We don't know truly what's going to happen. Some note around Nick Bosa in Ohio State. He's not going to return to Ohio State this year. The injury, the core muscle injury there, was something that was going to take a while. He's going to be a high pick. I think there were some hopes that he could get back for the latter part of the year. The reality is it's a serious injury. He needs to rehab. I don't have a problem with it. No, he's not being selfish. He's being smart. He's injured. He's not walking away from his team just because. He's going to take care of himself injury-wise and then prepare for the draft. To me, that's different. Alabama's got Tennessee this week. Question has been about should they play Tua Tagovailoa? I wouldn't. I believe that knee, everybody says, well, can he hurt it more? Yeah, you can. You can hurt it just by being on the field. And let me just say this. The update from Alabama is that he's actually feeling better in the early stages of this week than the early stages last week. So make the case that maybe he shouldn't have played last week. I don't have a problem if they play him. Here's what I would do. I'd sit him against Tennessee. And obviously he's got the bye week next week, the open date next week. I think getting that treatment every day and working in practice is going to be enough. I think that Alabama is good enough to beat everybody on their schedule, including LSU, the SEC championship game. I think they're good enough to possibly win the national championship with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. But their chances are a whole lot better with Tua. So I would say at this point, the only thing that would maybe risk the chance that they may not be what you expect them to be is complacency, which we don't normally see a lot of complacency out of this Alabama team. The second thing would be if Tua went down. They're a different team. They're not as dynamic. It certainly would make it more competitive, I just think it makes all the sense in the world to sit him. I don't know if I had to guess, I would guess that Nick's going to play him, particularly if he's feeling as well at the end of the week as he did the beginning of the week. Thinking about the job that some of the coaches in the SEC have done this year, Mark Stoops has been outstanding. How about Dan Mullen? That Florida team's got grit, got toughness. They're not as talented as LSU. They beat them with toughness. And then LSU turned around and beat Georgia with toughness. Getting better and better and starting to develop under their own image, under Dan's image, really impressive. And then, of course, got to give it to Ed Orgeron and his staff, what they have done. Dave Aranda, call it like it is. Studied the tape, out-coached by Dan Mullen in Florida. Flat out coached. Dave Aranda came back this past week and out-coached the pants off of Georgia. Absolutely made significant adjustments. Georgia was running the football well against LSU in that first series. Dave reduced the front a little bit, played a little more loaded box, which is what we talked about in the breakdowns, right? LSU had to play the run with numbers. They did. Georgia couldn't make them pay. They did a good job with zone pressures. LSU likes to play a lot of man. They were prepared for Fields being in the game, perhaps even more, because they didn't want to get caught in playing a lot of man. So they played a lot of zone this week and brought a lot of zone pressures. Confused the heck out of Fromm, and the blitz pressure got into Fromm's face, made him uncomfortable, and then the great job by LSU's defensive back covering Georgia's receivers couldn't get open. I've heard a lot about the quarterback spot at Georgia. He should have done this, should have done that. It didn't matter who was playing quarterback. Those receivers didn't get open against LSU's coverage. So again, no, you folks don't see that. And not to say that the quarterback play was good. And by the way, if you're going to play Justin Fields, play him. Play him and have a package other than just I'm coming in, run zone read. You got to have the threat of throwing the football in the game. I don't like the way George is handling the quarterback situation. Either play Justin Fields or don't. But if you play him, play him. Have him in the passing game. Utilize that. If you don't trust in that, then don't play him. Bringing him in to, I don't know, make him happy or bringing him in to run the zone read. I mean, what do you just soon bring in a sign that says, we're going to run the zone read here. Defense, just so you know. To me, that's not real bright. But the biggest issue was LSU's zone pressures and their coverage with the zone pressure. Fromm didn't have anywhere to go with the football. He didn't have time to step in his throws, and he didn't have open receivers. And LSU played the run with numbers. Really good job. That's great coaching because LSU doesn't have elite depth along their defensive line. Boy, they're awfully good in the secondary, and boy, were they superbly coached this past week. Superbly coached. Where does this go for Georgia? Where does this go for LSU? Well, Georgia, listen, the problems that were there that I'm going to just step up and say for me, I saw, I didn't know, I overlooked it because I saw things that were problematic, but I really thought that they were going to correct them, and they haven't to this point. Now, one or two things are going to happen. This will open up some of the young guys to recognize certain things that maybe heretofore they haven't, and it'll spur them on. They still think Georgia's better than anybody else remaining on their schedule roster-wise, but I can tell you, if they play like they did against LSU, the Florida game and the Kentucky game will be bigger challenges than any Georgia fan might have thought. If they use this to propel them to play better, then they should win both of those games. They're more talented than Florida. They're more talented than Kentucky. But they've got to play better. I don't like their chances against Alabama. I said Georgia was close to Alabama at the beginning of the year, and that's based upon where I thought some of the talent level was. But I can tell you that the tape shows that they're not that close to Alabama. And so, again, And I know Kirby's technically right when he said, we still control everything. If it includes beating Alabama after you beat everybody else, good luck with that. That's not much of a chance. For LSU, again, been consistent, but I want to see them finish Mississippi State off. And then I want to see what they do against Texas A&M and College Station at the end of the year. That's the games that, to me, are going to define their season, not Alabama. I know right now, just to give you an idea how fans are, including their fan base, it was over. After Florida, well, we see that. That's it. It's over. You know, it's done, you know. They beat Georgia, and then it's, oh, yeah, we can beat Alabama. Oh, yeah. And people even nationally saying they got the best chance of beating Alabama. Best chance, what is that? Come within 20 of them? I don't know. I can tell you this. LSU won't be afraid of Alabama. LSU just needs to take care of Mississippi State. Have a good week of preparation in the open date. I don't expect them to beat Alabama in any way, shape, or form. And no, I thought Georgia would beat LSU as well, but I thought Georgia would play well. I know Alabama is going to play well, and I know that LSU is going to have a hard time against an Alabama as opposed to Georgia. I can see that. Arkansas on the road, LSU will win. They certainly will beat Rice. But at A&M, Thanksgiving weekend, A&M's never beaten LSU. I'll say this. Everybody's made up their mind. Again, week to week, right? LSU last week, not good. This week, oh, they're really good. Yeah. Again, football people don't – we don't have the fan gene. We don't look at things with any bias, or we don't look at things with our heart. We look at it with our eyes. I'd say that A&M, who's off this week, has got Mississippi State. Of course, we know that they've played Alabama. They played Clemson, by the way. They've beaten Kentucky. They beat Mississippi State, Auburn, Ole Miss. Then they got Alabama, Birmingham. The November 24th game between LSU and A&M is going to decide who the second-best team in the West is. We know it's not Auburn. Let me back up. If you look at A&M and you look what they've accomplished to this point, they got to go to Mississippi State. LSU's got Mississippi State at home. I think, obviously, in my view, LSU and A&M look like the next best team in the West. However, Mississippi State's in that conversation as well. There's no doubt Mississippi State has, maybe from a perspective in the conference, two losses. Maybe they've kind of been lost out of it. But certainly if Mississippi State's able to win both of those games, then why not Mississippi State? That's where the West is right now. LSU, A&M, and Mississippi State. Auburn's out of the picture, and we know that Arkansas is bad. Now, Ole Miss has found a way to rally. Good record, but they're not in conversation amongst the second best in the West. Some other thoughts. Iowa continues to play really well. And we know they lost to Wisconsin. But let's not give the West to Wisconsin just yet. Nebraska, tough loss to Northwestern. Folks, I'm going to say that Scott Frost, I think, will eventually do a really good job at Nebraska. And I don't think what he inherited was all that good. But let me explain something. And I hope it's taken the right way. If it's not, then it's in your ears and not my mouth. But what Scott is doing is trying to put his own stamp on the program, which is good. But he also understands one way of how to coach. And his philosophy that he wants to run shows that he has one philosophy and he's not well-rounded. And if I'm going to criticize Gus Malzahn for it, let me just say this, that Scott's going to have to recruit well to fit the players that he wants. And to me, great coaches are the ones that could modify what they do a little bit to give each of his teams in every game out a chance to win. And that's not happening at Nebraska. Yeah, they're playing harder. They're playing with more discipline. But to lose to Troy, to blow a lead against Northwestern, Northwestern doesn't have any more talent than Nebraska. They were better coached. You blow a lead that big, that's on coaching. You can't sit there and say 0-6 is all due to what Scott Frost inherited. It's not. You can say it. You're just wrong. A big part of that is Scott's inability to adjust. And that's something he's going to have to learn going forward. I didn't expect them to be 4-2. But if you look at the roster, even at its current state, it's better. It's as good as Northwestern, a little better in some areas, certainly better than Troy. And Troy has got good players, not as many as Nebraska. And so a little bit of his attitude, a little bit of his discipline, a little bit of when you play him, who knows? You know, they lost the game at the beginning of the year. That's a win there. They'll beat Bethune-Cookman. So there's two wins on their schedule that they're guaranteed to have. But this game against Minnesota this week is pretty big. Another case, Nebraska's got better talent than Minnesota. And at some point, you've got to not only get your guys to play better, but learn how to finish. So it is not a condemnation on the hire. But it is another indication of the hype getting so out of control. This guy is just the fair-haired boy. He's the perfect fit. Yes, he is. But it's going to take him a little while to learn and that this is not the same program. And it's going to be a challenge, which I think he's going to eventually have Nebraska at that level where Wisconsin is and where Iowa is and maybe better, to where Nebraska is the team to beat in the West like Ohio State is the team to beat in Ohio State. But I don't think that's going to be easy, but I think he can do it. But he's going to have to learn and grow as a coach, and he's going to have to listen. He talked about guys not wanting to win. He said that in the press conferences. His guys wanted to win last week. His guys played hard last week. They didn't get it done. Great win for Jeremy Pruitt at Tennessee. Got the breakdowns of all these games, but really get into detail about what Tennessee did. Tennessee was very aggressive. They came after Jarrett Stidham. This Auburn offense is atrocious. It's offensive line issues, which leads to inability to run the football with the type of tempo that they want. And they are trying to do things with Jarrett Stidham that just doesn't fit what Jarrett does well, but what Gus wants to do. And it's another example. Square peg, round hole. That's coaching. The inability to adjust, that's a problem. It's a problem at Auburn. Gus is not going anywhere. Okay, they're not paying off $32 million, even at Auburn, to make him go away. Not happening. Not happening next year. But he's got to get players to run his system, or he's got to modify his system. And I think we've seen that he doesn't modify his system, and he does not hands off enough to let somebody else modify it for him. You can't do what you don't know. You get somebody in that can do it. He's not willing to do that. Ergo, we got a problem. For Tennessee, big-time win. Big-time performance by Garantano. Here again, everybody's jumping on the bandwagon excited. Should be at Tennessee. It's a win. Everybody's in a different situation. Tennessee's in a situation in which they need some good things, some good positive reinforcement to happen what they're doing. They're still a long ways away. And no, they're not going to give Alabama a really good fight. I mean, they're going to fight. They're just not going to be a real threat. And we'll see if Tennessee can improve and finish out the season, you know, in decent fashion. We'll see. If you look at it, South Carolina road is not a great situation, but Charlotte, Kentucky, Missouri, Vanderbilt, I mean, there's, you know, I don't know how many more wins they've got there. We know Charlotte's a win, but, you know, winning at Vanderbilt, beating Missouri, definite possibilities. At South Carolina, Kentucky at home, probably not a great situation. Just got to get better. Just got to get better. Washington, Oregon was an outstanding game. I tell you, this Oregon team has gotten better and better. They're going to rue the day that they lost that game to Stanford, because they're better than Stanford, and they're the Pac-12's best football team right now. I know USC's starting to play better, and we always know that USC with their talent at some point kind of figures it out. Oregon's 5-1, and an unbeaten Oregon would have definitely put them in play and deserving. A one-loss Oregon is deserving of consideration. Don't think they'll get there. They're pretty good. Washington's a good team as well. That loss to Auburn is just going to hurt them from a resume standpoint. Texas struggled a bit with Baylor. Consistency. Playing big games versus letdowns. It's Tom Herman's issue. Pitt, Notre Dame. Brian Kelly very fortunate to win that game. Now, What does it say? The year that they made the BCS championship game and played Alabama, they struggled with a lot of teams. The resume was unbeaten, but looked bad. The film looked bad. Wonder how this Notre Dame team is going to respond. They've looked too good, looked a lot better than that year's team. They didn't look very good this week. Defensively, this is a good Notre Dame team. Very curious to see if the scare gets them straight. How about Mark D'Antonio? Count them out at your own peril. James Franklin, again, the talker, the salesman, just can't get his team up for games they should beat. Outcoached again. Texas A&M, South Carolina, good win for A&M. Good, well-coached, tough football team. Takes care of business. You know, West Virginia last week struggled against Kansas. Really made a lot of mistakes. You think, well, they'll figure it out. Boy, they went to Ames and they did not. 150 yards of offense, they get that halfway through the first quarter most games. Iowa State made them pay. Exposed, don't like the Big 12's chances of making the playoffs any more than I like the Pac-12's chances, quite frankly. Alabama takes care of Missouri. Ugly performance by Virginia Tech against North Carolina. Escaped is the best way you can put it. Miami, boy, can't trouble at the quarterback position, a real trouble there. Good for UCLA getting their win against Cal. I thought UCLA, Chip Kelly, would get their win. I thought Scott Frost would win over that. Michigan, very impressive against Wisconsin. Really impressive. Wisconsin has looked pretty average on tape. Give them a lot of credit. Blue collar, Michigan definitely was the better team going in. Very impressive. Did a really good job. Really good job. Good defensive team and obviously made some plays on offense. How good are they? We'll see. Can't wait to see them play little brother this week and see how they do in East Lansing. You know Michigan State's going to be fired up, well coached. We'll see if Jim Harbaugh can match the intensity there. Ole Miss survives against Arkansas. Good offensive performance. And give USC credit. Thought they'd beat Colorado at home. They did. Colorado exposed. Hadn't played a really good team yet this year. Still a very good team is Colorado. Just not a legitimate, you know, unbeaten run in the Pac-12, make a run at the national playoffs type of team. This week, we mentioned some key games we'll get into on Thursday. Michigan, Michigan State. Oklahoma, TCU's lost a lot of luster. Maryland, their run game against Iowa. Like this Iowa team is playing a lot better than people will know. That Wisconsin game is going to be costly to Iowa, that loss. Alabama, Tennessee, Colorado, Washington, Minnesota, Nebraska, NC State, Clemson going to get into that. Maybe the toughest foe for Clemson rest of the way other than Clemson themselves. Mississippi State, LSU, Tigers at home. See if they can come out, play with the consistency of effort and intensity. Ohio State, Purdue. Hey, can Purdue, with their offense, put a little scare into Ohio State? Be interesting to see there. Oregon, Washington State. We'll see. Like this Oregon team on tape, how good are they really? Don't know. Can they go to Pullman? Strange things happen in Pullman. It's kind of like Friday the 13th on Halloween or something. It's just weird. Kentucky's got to take care of business against a tough defensive Vandy team. Can UCLA make it two in a row against Arizona? We're going to get into all of that. I want to answer a couple questions before I get into some NFL talk. Richard asks, what stood out to you in the Patriots versus the Chiefs on Sunday night? Stood out to me was really good offenses, that the Patriots defense forced the Chiefs into field goals in the first half. The Chiefs did the same thing to the Patriots in the second half, and thus it became a game. Two really good teams that, as I look at them and rank them now, clearly the two best teams in the AFC. Very good possibility we could see that game as the AFC championship game. I thought the Chiefs showed a lot in the second half in that they were able to fight back. I worry about the defense of the Chiefs, but I do know there's some injured guys that are coming back, and that drop-off is significant. So we're just going to have to monitor this Chiefs team, and this Patriots team is going to be better and better as the year goes along. And listen, home field advantage is going to be key. Had the Chiefs been able to pull that out, it would have been huge to have a two-game lead over the Patriots for the race for home field. But what stood out is that right now they're the two best teams in the AFC, both really good offensively. Patriots are going to be better defensively. Chiefs, I'm not sure how much better, but they will be better. Richard also asks, what are your thoughts on the Bucs firing of defensive coordinator Mike Smith? Expected. We're at the point where when people are not responding, you begin to see some moves being made. They're not good defensively, and it's not all Mike. But look, when you are not generating any pressure, you have to find a way to do so. You're going to have to be aggressive. You're going to have to be blitz. You're going to have to do some things out of your comfort zone. And he wasn't able to do that and cost him his job. Is it going to make them better? Well, sometimes a new voice helps. But the Bucs are not and have not been a playoff caliber team. They're still not. I see that clearly on tape. I know it was a great start. And the first thing I said was, oh, boy, these Bucs fans are going to really be excited about, hey, they can make a playoff run. They're not a playoff caliber team. They really are not. They're not that good defensively. And offensively, they can't match Atlanta and the Saints in their own division, in my view. I want to talk a little bit about some play calling. And this really goes in college and in the NFL. There's a belief in a misunderstanding by fans on different play calling issues. And when you go in with a game plan on the play call sheet, and I'm going to use offensively play calls for an example, but this applies on defense and on special teams as well. You go in with a game plan of things that you think are going to work against your opponent that you can do well, that you've practiced all week and you've thrown certain things out that you weren't as good at, but you feel more comfortable with. And you go with that. What you do during the course of the game is you note on the call sheet what play is good, when it's good, why it's good. Play calls work or not depending upon the situation, folks. Down and distance, field position, how the opposing team is playing you. Okay, play calls don't win or lose on a called play. It works or doesn't work depending on the execution and the utilization at the proper place and time. The right look, what the opposition is doing. So when you get a lot of this, you know, for example, we talked a little bit about the Georgia circumstance. So Georgia was running the football well against LSU in the first half. They stopped running it, the fans will say. That's why we lost, Chris. No, they stopped running it because LSU made the adjustments. So what made that run successful didn't continue to apply. Where they were not able to have success is to be able to take advantage of the overplay of the run so they get back to the run. Things work very often because of how a defense is playing you. Running it, running it, running it. Well, when you run it successfully, they make adjustments, folks, so that what you have to be successful is no longer there. Now, to the fan, they don't know that the fan doesn't know and the media doesn't know what they're doing defensively. There's just a bunch of guys out there that don't really understand, standing up, moving around, hands down, hands up. They don't get it. They just know my team ran a run, my team ran a play. It worked for this many yards or it didn't work. Works, it's a good play call. Doesn't work, it's a bad play call. No, that's not how it works. There's a reason why it works. That's what we try to do for you, explain. There are reasons why a play works, how you're able to execute, how you're able to block that front. So that you can run it. Well, they make adjustments. You got to have the ability to either be able to run against that front or take advantage of the overplay of the run so that you can make them pay for the overplay and then get them back out of that look to a more run-friendly look so that you can run. That's what I think people are missing. All right, I want to get into some NFL talk. I want to start with, you know, it's been a tough few months. We've lost some owners that they're getting up in age. It's inevitable. We lost Tom Benson in March. We lost Alex Spanos last week, and I've not had a chance to talk about his loss since that happened last week. And he wasn't really active. Dean has been running the team. His younger brother, John, is helping him. We lost two guys, and they were in the 80s, and it is sad to lose guys that are so valuable in the league. We lost Paul Allen yesterday. Paul was a lot younger. He was 65 years old and gone way too young, suffered cancer, and unfortunately took his life. Couple of things about Paul. I tweeted out a couple of things. You can follow me on Twitter, at Landry Football. One was the unassuming nature. In owners' meetings where owners had suits and, you know, entourages and, you know, somebody – carrying their Gucci attaché briefcase or what have you. There was Paul Allen. Looked like a lumberjack from Oregon. Blue jeans that kind of the ones that look like those overall blue jeans. He'd have a flannel shirt that was untucked. I mean, he looked like he's just somebody that took the wrong, you know, came in for the lumberjack union's meeting and he took the wrong turn and he ended up in the NFL owners meetings. You know, hair is not always well kept. He was sans the beard in the latter part of his life, but in the early part of his life, he always had the beard. He really did look like a Northwestern, camping, grungy look type of guy. Very unassuming. Didn't have the big entourage. Every guy's man, was into music and played the guitar and did a lot of things. He was the richest owner in the NFL by a wide margin. Stan Kroenke is the second richest owner who owns the Rams. And Stan was a billionaire himself and married into the Walton family, as in Walmart. So he's rich from both ends. You take the combined wealth of the second, third, and fourth richest owners in the NFL, and they were still short of the overall net worth of Paul Allen. He, obviously from Microsoft fame, and did a lot of things in the philanthropic manner to help. But let me give you an idea. He was very, very unassuming, as I mentioned. He wasn't really involved in a lot of committees or things, but he was always a sounding board for folks. And he was always willing to step up to make the league better. We know that he went in and built that stadium. And the stadium is, you got to admit, Seattle Stadium is weird looking. I mean, just kind of the triangle looks on the top of the end zone and ergonomically, with all the sounds and just really weird in a very affectionate way, I'd say, kind of reflected Paul's personality. Very, very exotic looking, but it had a purpose. He built it. He saved the team from possibly leaving Seattle. Remember, Seattle was the threat was they were going to move the team to L.A. This was when the Rams and the Raiders were not in L.A. and Chargers certainly. So they were thinking about moving to Southern California, and it was him that saved it, bought the team, saved it, and put in a lot of money. Bought a 767 jet and tore up the inside and had him custom made for his Portland Trailblazers basketball team. He had one made for his Seattle team so they could fly in custom, seats that could fit the leg length and the girth of football players and basketball players. Two different planes, not one, two. And I was privy to something. I tweeted this out yesterday, but when we change our video system in the NFL, I'm not talking about the videos of NFL films. I'm talking about how every team has a video department that shoots the practices and shoots the game films. And the big thing is, for people who don't know, whoever the home game is, that video crew is responsible for not only taping that game, but they're responsible for sending that tape into NFL films, and it's duplicated so that every team in the league gets a copy of that film. And then, of course, video directors home and away are constantly filming the game from multiple angles. End zone tight, end zone wide, sideline tight, sideline wide, and you intercut it to give different looks to different positions for evaluation purposes. Well, back in the day, film was on 16mm film. It graduated to what we used to call Betacam, not beta, the beta that you used to have, the home beta version, but a Betacam, which was, guys, the video machines were about $150,000, $200,000 a piece. It was kind of like what TV stations use. So the quality was really high, and it was a beta cam size type tape. It's like a cartridge that was smaller than a VHS, and that's how it was done. And it had the ability from a tracking standpoint to rewind slow and back to catch every nuance in the evaluation. But as technology improved, of course, Paul Allen, Microsoft guy, very much a technological person, was involved in trying to improve to a new system. Video became the age of digitizing things. where you can shoot it and then send it digitally, where you're not literally sending a copy of the tape and mailing it FedEx, but that you could send it through broadband, through, you know, and I'm not a techie guy, but, you know, through your computer, through the phone line, through the wireless and whatnot. So this required a very advanced and expensive video system, which all 32 teams had to be together with, like on one network, so to speak. Well, it was very expensive. Very expensive. So expensive that the NFL owners wanted to make the transition to the new Pinnacle system, which it was called then, in stages, so that even NFL owners, as rich as they are, but still need to make payroll with their players and staff and whatnot, they couldn't afford to buy this all at once and spend all the money all at once. A lot of them couldn't. So can we do this in stages, they were asking. Well, I'm not a technological guy, but as they discussed it, well, you could do A, B, and C, but not X, Y, and Z. So you wouldn't have all the effects of being able to get things done in the seamless way. So the right thing to be, the right thing to get this transition worked was to, you know, get it all done at once. And so they agreed that was the best way to do it. The problem is can all pay for it right now? How do we do that? Paul Allen. And visualize this. So if you got to pay 1/32nd of this and it was expensive, maybe too expensive to do in one fell swoop, Paul Allen stepped up and paid for all 32 teams, all 31 other teams plus himself. He fronted the bill so that everybody could have the system immediately, right away, and the other teams could just pay him back without interest over time. And I'm not quite sure exactly. That's how wealthy the guy was and how forward-thinking he was. Now, he was a guy that, again, was wealthy and wealthy in large part due to his technological vision. And today, things are, imagine, we always, as coaches and as scouts, broke down tape in different ways. We'll take the offense and we'll take all the third and long plays, all the third and short plays, and we'll look at the entire game in an overview, but then we want to look at all the third down offenses, third and short offenses. Well, we literally had to cut and splice video. Then we had to, with the beta cam, a guy had to have an editing machine, a video guy, and he'd have to physically press the play and go through this and take up all the third and short and do that. Now everything is digitized. So as the plays are in and entered, you can literally just, boom, you have the video. And here's the thing. You don't need a bunch of copies. The video goes to everybody that needs it. So, boom, you press a button. There's the Titans and Chargers tape. Boom. And you can hit that, and you can hit any view you want. You can take down all the third down plays or all that digitized. Again, took a lot of technology, took a lot of money. But it gives you an idea of, A, what his vision was, what he thought the league needed, and he had the money. It was like pulling out a 20 and giving it to somebody to go buy themselves lunch. It was pretty impressive to see. When you're dealing with the wealthiest of wealthy owners, and to have a guy that was so far, in a way, more wealthy than they were, it was unique to see at owners' meeting. So, rest in peace, Paul Allen. A look at last week's NFL. Talked a little bit about Kansas City, New England. Around the league, Tennessee certainly had problems offensively protecting against Baltimore. How good is this Baltimore team? How good is this AFC North going to be? Baltimore's playing pretty good. Told you Cincinnati's not a bad team. Pittsburgh with the win over Cincinnati. Division's going to be a race. Dallas bounced back. Hey, what's up with Jacksonville's offense? What's not up? Really bad looking. Denver can't stop anybody. The Rams continue to roll. Houston suddenly finding life Still got problems on that offensive line. Washington taking care of Carolina. Washington's playing pretty good ball. No, they got beaten up soundly by the Saints, but a good win by them. The Jets, telling Jets offensively, pretty good team. I know the Colts not that good. Jets are playing their way in the mix. Minnesota gets a win. Miami, Chicago. What a game that was. Chicago completely losing that game. I thought they would have a great chance. Once Tannehill was out of the game, I thought they would get good pressure on Osweiler and have a huge effect on that game. Did not do so. Miami staying in this race. Can't beat New England, but they can stay in the race. Oakland still struggling mightily. Seattle starting to play better. Cleveland can't do anything on offense. Defensively, they're keeping it every game. The Chargers playing good football. Watch out for them at 4-2. Mentioned Pittsburgh beating Cincinnati. Pittsburgh starting to play with some confidence. The Le'Veon Bell distraction, still an issue, but we'll see how that plays out. That North is going to be interesting, as I mentioned. Tampa and Atlanta, two teams going nowhere fast. Atlanta gets it done. Tampa, we went through some of their issues there. Some games this week that are going to be focusing in on Thursday. New Orleans, Baltimore. New England, Chicago. Detroit, Miami. Minnesota, the Jets. Tennessee Chargers, going to be playing in the London game in the morning. Houston, Jacksonville, big AFC South game. The Rams, San Francisco, Niners losing a tough game to Green Bay last night. Great players make great plays at the biggest moments. That's what Aaron Rodgers did to kind of save the Packers in that game in which they were outplayed by the Niners most of it. Dallas, Washington, that's a big one as well. Cincinnati, Kansas City, Sunday night's going to be a fun game to watch as well. Carolina goes to Philadelphia. All these games, first of all, in depth are broken down inside the film room. We've got all the film room breakdowns of all the games of past week where you can learn what happened and why. And then obviously we'll break down all these games going forward. So we appreciate you joining us today, and join us again on Thursday as we look ahead towards next week. We'll answer your questions. Send it to us here. Contact Chris on LandryFootball.com, and I'll address it here. And a reminder, check us out at LandryFootball.com for all the film room breakdowns. That's what we do for you. We give you an inside look, in-depth around the world of college football and the NFL. It's one-stop shopping football. See the game and understand the game from a coaching and scouting perspective at LandryFootball.com. Check us out. We'll talk to you next time on another edition of the Landry Football Podcast on LandryFootball.com.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence. This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Falcons went 3-for-3 in the red zone. And Buccaneer opponents are 11 for 11 in the red zone. Now, those are the kind of things I get. If you're 11 for 11, and if last four games, NFL worst 15 for 16 on the season. So those are glaring statistics. At one point in the game yesterday, they put up on the board, they said, the Buccaneers last 14 possessions, and I want you to listen closely, the last 14 possessions, nine touchdowns, two field goals, two punts, and a kneel down. So you did your job twice out of 50. You remember the Bucks of old? You remember the Bucks of old? What did Warren Sapp used to say? Give me 17 points, period. How many touchdowns are you going to give up? Every drive's a touchdown.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.